So, President Rocamora, it's interesting you were talking about the setting. A little piece of trivia, the Reflecting the Flame sculpture was a piece of art, I should say, was done by an artist from Ruston, Louisiana. So that's a
There
little
you go.
trivia, which is pretty cool. And that was my first banquet address and my first convention in 1991. So a really special speech.
There you go. Did you hear the presidential release in 1991?
Yes,
Okay, good.
as a matter of fact.
Nice.
So we are now have a very special part of our evening, and I just want to remind everybody, I want to thank everybody for sending in questions. I know, and I'll remind everybody that we'll be handling those questions throughout this evening. People can still share questions in the chat and also can email questions to cdanielson@nfb.org. And just a reminder, if we don't get to all our questions tonight, our fabulous communications team will follow up. And I also want to thank Daniel Martinez for our Spanish translation and also thank Natalie for our captioning tonight. So I will turn it over to you for the next very exciting and special part of our evening.
Okay, thank you, Pam. And it is a special evening. First, I want to, I guess, begin by acknowledging that here with me to my right is Mark Maurer, our immediate past president, and has also the distinction of making the most presidential releases, totaling over 300. So, Dr. Maurer, welcome back to the presidential release.
Greetings, fellow Federationists. This is Tuesday, December, and so forth. I've started a lot of presidential releases that way, and it's great to be back.
And then to my left is Mary Ellen Jernigan, who has been around the Federation for a long time and who has sometimes been on the releases, but always around the presidency of the Federation. So, Mrs. Jernigan, good evening.
Good evening, everybody. Delighted to be here. I was at that very first presidential release and probably can't claim that I've heard all 500 of them, but pretty close to that, I would guess.
Well, we're going to have some conversation this evening and just kind of reflect on the release. But let's start by really going back to presidential release number one, which was recorded on November 12, 1973. And I had heard presidential release number one previously. I listened to it prior to my making my first presidential release. But when I listened to it this time, something struck me about it. So let's roll this clip.
The following tape message comes to you from Kenneth Jernigan, President, National Federation of the Blind, 218 Randolph Hotel Building, Des Moines, Iowa, 50309.
Fellow Federationists, we have had a great many firsts during the past few years. This is another. It's the first time that we've tried a presidential release by cassette. I think this may give us an opportunity to talk more personally than we can do by mail. And also, I hope at least, it'll be a means of speeding a great deal of information to you. You know, you can talk, I suppose, a good deal faster than you can write and put a good deal more material onto one cassette than you can into either one letter or a series of letters.
So when I listened to this the other day, I thought, well, wait a minute. This suggests that there was a presidential release before the recordings. And so we have a great archive here at the National Federation of the Blind. So I went and talked to our archivist. And in fact, there were presidential release files going back to August of 1968, which would have been shortly after Dr. Jernigan took over the presidency at the convention. And those hard copy, printed presidential releases ran from 1968 through early 1974, and they total over 200. Most of these included individual letter correspondence that were shared with leaders of the Federation, but in the files, they're designated as presidential releases. So I guess the first question for the group here is, I was going to ask about what the Federation leadership communications were like prior to the recorded releases.
Well, now, you know, Mr. President, 47 years ago was a very long time ago, obviously. But I think to answer that question you've asked, we ought to look a little bit at the context of what was communication like in the world in 1973. For instance, there were no personal computers. There was no word processing as we know it today. There was no Braille translation software. There were no Braille electronic Braille embossers. The internet didn't exist. There wasn't email. There weren't cell phones. Now, you did have telephones back then. And you had long distance calls. Now, I suspect there are people listening here who wouldn't have the foggiest idea what a long distance person-to-person call was. Now, aren't all telephone calls person-to-person? Well, Mr. Kimono, do you know what a person-to-person call was?
Yes, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Good, tell me about it.
Well, you know, that's when you had to pay per minute, right, to call someone long distance.
Well, was that different from any other kind of long distance?
Well, that I can't tell you.
I didn't think you would. Okay. Here's what you had. You could dial a call, make a call, and talk to whoever happened to answer, and you paid a lower rate. But since calls were so very expensive, you didn't often do that. You placed a person-to-person call, and you went through an operator, and the operator dialed the call and asked for the person that you were calling for. If that person was there, you talked to the person at a higher rate, and if the person wasn't there, you didn't pay at all. So you had to gamble on what you were going to do. I also looked up what calls cost in 1973 and learned that in today's dollars, a 10-minute call would have been about $25. Mm. All right. So then photocopies. Photocopiers were just coming on the scene. They used a coated paper. It was a one-at-a-time operation. It was slow, expensive, and what you got was a pretty blurry copy. So you can see that communication options were somewhat limited. I'm trying to figure out, I know this about those releases. They were basically collections of letters that Dr. Jernigan would have gotten in Iowa. And those, I looked through some of the topics. They were what you would expect, items that he found of interest, things he thought people in Federation ought to know about, some Federation family news. They didn't seem to be connected with any particular narrative. They were just have been a collection of letters. It appears that they were sent to the board and state affiliate presidents and some chapter presidents. Now, they would have come to him in Iowa at the Commission for the Blind office or the Federation office. And then he sent them out to Hazel Tenbrook at the Federation's office. It was on 2652 Shasta Road, I believe. It was It was the Federation's office where the monitor was printed, and it was attached to the Tenbrook home. But what I can't figure out is how she duplicated and sent them. The monitor was produced there and it was mimeographed. So whether she had a copy machine that she used, or whether she retyped them, or staff there at the office retyped them and mimeographed them, I don't know. That's a mystery we can perhaps dig into. Now, of course, we had the monitor, and it would have been being produced at that time in print and in Braille. We had two in-person board meetings, I believe, each year, one in the fall. At that time, in after Dr. Grimm became president, they would have been in Des Moines. You had the national convention. You had a lot of personal one-to-one correspondence. You had a few of those person-to-person calls, I suspect. but the options were pretty limited.
Mr. President, I was a student in the early 70s, went to college in 1970, and I joined my local chapter in South Bend, Indiana. And fairly soon, I attended my first state convention in the fall of 1970 in Indiana. And by 1971, I had become vice president of our Indiana affiliate. So along about then, I began to get these releases. They were ordinary letter type documents, and they came in a customary envelope, the one that you get all sorts of business communications within. And I would get my reader in college to read them. I had a reader, the Agency for the Blind in Iowa, the Commission for the Blind that Dr. Jernigan was directing, authorized me to have reader service. And I knew that what the Agency for the Blind wanted me to do was get my reader to read whatever I needed to have read. And sometimes it would be my school books, and sometimes it would be letters from the National Federation of the Blind. It's a long time ago and nobody's listening from the commission anyway. So I can tell you that sometimes I would borrow an automobile and I would get my reader to read street signs as we went down the highway to do Federation business. This was all in the spirit of reading the proper things. And I didn't want to limit what my reader would read. As a matter of fact, I thought the purpose of all of this was to get the broadest possible education for me. And one of the greatest educational experiences was to learn how to build an organization and to find ways to get it to do the kind of work that would change opportunities and possibilities for blind people in the area where I worked. But the releases came out and they covered activities of the Federation and what people in the Federation were thinking and doing. And they were significant questions to Dr. Jernigan about what our policy was with respect to certain topics and what our position would be on policies dealing with legal matters and other things. In other words, the questions weren't much different from the kinds that are raised now in presidential release presentations. It's just that the format was different and it was very intermittent. There wasn't one every month necessarily, and sometimes there was more than one a month. And the idea behind it was that you would take the thoughts in these documents and discuss them at your chapter meeting of that month. So sometimes I took the ideas with me to my local chapter to talk.
Well, you know, without the benefit of having Dr. Jernigan here to talk about what it was like and what the purpose was in developing the releases, do either of you have reflections on how he felt about the release and his thoughts about it?
Well, I know that he liked the recorded release. He was a very personable human being, and he liked being with others very much. And he wanted communication on an individual basis as much as possible. And with that in mind, he thought that his putting his own voice on record on the recording would make it much more personal for people to hear from him directly. Mm-hmm. His idea of the presidential release, especially the recorded one, was that members had a right to hear it. The officers, presidents of chapters and so on, were supposed to get these releases, and then the members had a right to hear from their president, their national president. It would be very unusual for Dr. Jernigan to attend a local chapter meeting because he just couldn't do all that. But to have his voice in the room with the members meant that there could be communication with him. And if people had questions, they could write him later and tell him what they thought of the presidential release. And he would essentially universally respond.
And when you listen to the early, especially release number one, very conversational.
You know, I think in addition to the things Dr. Maurer has talked about, the Federation in 1973, in the beginning of the 70s, was undergoing a tremendous growth spurt. And I know it was the convention in 1971, because that was the first convention that I managed the logistics for. That was in Houston. And on the very last day of that convention, by dragging in two or three of the hotel staff we'd been working with who registered, we hit 1,000. Here we are then in 1973, and we registered 1,506 people. Mm. Tremendous growth. At that convention, and that was in New York City at the Statler Hilton Hotel, at that convention, we had all 48 states represented. We had all states except Vermont, but we had DC. So we had an affiliate in every state, and we had attendance from every state except Vermont. We had done a lot of organizing, brought in new state affiliates. And that was also the time when we had unified the name. Mm-hmm. By that time, we were well underway to having every state be National Federation of the Blind of given state. Mm-hmm. So what the recorded release began to do was to continue to build that unified action, that unified friendship. We really became one. Mm-hmm. In a way we had never been. And that just warmed Dr. Jernigan's heart beyond measure. Mm. To really be able to talk to everybody at local chapters in the same month and have a common knowledge, a common set of actions to focus on. That was revolutionary and contributed then to the further really strengthening at all levels of the Federation during the 70s.
Hmm. Dr. Maurer, you've made more releases than anyone, over 300, and have appeared on many others that you weren't primarily in charge of. What has the release meant to you both as a member and as a leader?
Oh, I love to do the release. Making the release is a fun thing to do. And the plan is to be communicative with people, to express what we're doing and to show the drama of it and to show the personal relationship that I have with the organization and that the members have with the organization, and to invite people to be more involved than they have been. So the release has been all that. And then, of course, there were the jokes. 300 releases, and we didn't just do one joke usually on the release. So I tried not to duplicate, and I don't know whether I have, but it was hard to remember all 1,200 jokes or whatever. Consequently, to try to have both the serious business of what we do, enough humor to know that the organization has a lighter side, to know that the members build the organization, to project that we can do more than we've done in the past, to make it clear that we're proud of the history we've got, but we are building for tomorrow and making something exciting come true that hasn't been true in the past, and that what we need in order to get that done is the individual members to know that they can participate fully and make the organization bigger, brighter, and better than it's been, and tougher and also more resilient and imaginative. This is what the release is about for me. It's always been like that. And I like to, I have as much interest in talking with the members as other people do. I've been around to every state affiliate and to hundreds of chapters. And I meet people and they say, do you remember the time that you, and then they tell me something I did to build their confidence or something. And I regret to say that often I don't remember that. I'm glad I did it. It's like me to do it. It's like the Federation to want us to do it. It's like the Federation to say to each other, we have got to believe enough in one another that we can help the person on the other side who's having trouble today get beyond that trouble and build for a great life tomorrow. And then take that spirit and spread it to those who haven't yet heard and don't yet know and don't yet believe. All of that is part of the release for me.
Yeah, nice. Now, Pam, you're not in the room with us, so you don't get any cookies. Sorry.
I know. You can have some for us.
Feel free to jump in with a question if you have one.
Well, I do have a question, as a matter of fact, and this is for all of you. What are some of your favorite moments or kind of anything behind the scenes? I'm sure like everything, you know, when we hear the presidential release, it sounds like it's gone off without, you know, any issues or any funny behind the scenes stories or very memorable release moments that you'd like to share? Probably a lot of them. It's hard to choose.
Well, your favorite moment in making the release, Mr. President. Tell us about that. What has been your favorite?
Well, that's a tough question. For me, of course, it's been fun to engage the kids in the customary endings of the release. I have to say that in making the release, you know, I, of course, grew up with the release as it was. And I heard people say I'm sure as long as you did, Dr. Maurer, that the presidential releases are too long. And they're hard to make shorter because there's a lot to talk about. If we weren't doing anything, there wouldn't be, we could make them shorter. I actually think that the live format has, we didn't think it up on purpose. When we got to March of last year and I thought, oh man, I got to make a release for April. What can I say and send out, and where are people going to play it? They're not getting together. So we thought, well, why don't we do it live? We had no idea whether it would work, what it would mean, how it would be. And I think it's actually turned out to be a positive, because it's also gotten us to think about the release in the traditional way that we have, but also to get us really back to that conversational piece, which in a static recording is hard to do. Dr. Jernigan was clearly great at it. I think the live format has at least helped me feel good about getting back to that. But the other thing is bringing in some of the, you know, when we can bring in audio from Federation events or interesting things that we've done, I think that's a neat thing that we can do beyond just sitting and talking as well.
So the presidential release now, pardon me, Mr. Jernigan, we'll get back to you in a second if it's okay. The release has themes. And so it depends on which part of the year you're in. It depends on whether the presentation you have to make is one that has danger in it. There have been a number of times when we faced problems that were going to hurt us, and we have to find a way to express those without frightening people too much. And then there are periods when the release is there to express mostly joy. Mm-hmm. The one that comes, the year divides, as we have often said, in half. One half is the convention season and one half is the Christmas season. Some people don't celebrate Christmas, and for you, I wish you the other half of the year to celebrate what suits you. But in any case, the year divides to the season of convention and the season for celebrating the great feasts of the winter, and the one that I celebrate is the Christmas season. So for me, this is how it divides. And especially, I tell stories about my own past along about the Christmas time, and I've made a bunch of releases, and each Christmas time I tried to put something together that had enough to do with Christmas that mattered, because for us in the Federation, we have to find miracles. How many miracles? Well, usually for our funding, we need a miracle a year. And in one sense, this isn't all that serious, but in one sense it is. We have to have something that is so unusual every year that we are scraping the edges of building for tomorrow, and yet we find enough money to do it. And when we get funding in, we find ways to build programs that create opportunities for the blind, and we need to create more of them. We've never had enough. And so when we get more funding in that we think might be fairly stable funding, we imagine the programs that can usefully use the money. And yet we, even when there's a pandemic or something, we have to keep raising enough money to have enough. So we need a miracle or so a year for our finance. Then we need miracles for families. Suppose you get a family and the children are trying to figure out how to learn in this time when there's no system that works very well in the educational space, and the computers don't have all the accessibility built in that you need, and the teachers don't know how to use the computers even so. You still need a miracle for that family in order to get the kind of education that we have. We can provide some of these miracles, but we've got to have miracles both individually and organizationally every year. So that's what Christmas for me is about. It's a time when you can expect some kind of extraordinary thing to happen, which is usually a fairly small thing, but something that will help to show the support and the love that builds. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So one time I put together a piece that was all about bringing home the Christmas tree, which we did when I was a kid. And I had fun doing that, but I tried to have fun on the release, especially during the celebration seasons. And then when you come to convention, you got to talk about convention and what we're going to do to the fat boys and things like that. I mean, it's the only important thing to do. Find out a way that we can show that we can make the programs that deal with what matters to us work the way we want them to do. And so that's that part of the season. And each presidential release falls into some category of time and theme,
yeah.
and they should reflect that. And at least I tried to have that happen.
Yeah.
Pardon me for interrupting, yeah. Mrs. Jernigan.
Oh, no. All I was going to say was, as President Riccobono was thinking about this current format and all that it has to offer, I was thinking, oh my goodness, Dr. Jernigan would be thrilled with it and a little bit jealous. Because although he loved talking to people,
yeah.
The one-wayness of yeah. all of the releases he did, it was the only possibility. Yeah. So he probably didn't think of it as a disappointment, right. but now he would be, to use one of Dick Edlund's favorite expressions, he would be in hog heaven.
yeah, I think it's interesting how when you look at the release, it is as consistent as the Federation has been in terms of message, in terms of engagement, and in terms of really promoting a constant theme of collective action and also togetherness, which I think, Dr. Maurer, is part of the theme that you're expressing in some of the stories. I pulled up presidential release number 56, which was the first one recorded and distributed from this building in January of 1980. I didn't necessarily know that that was the first one from the building, but Dr. Jernigan talks about it in an article that he wrote in the Monitor in 1984 after the 100th release happened a few months before that. And on release number 56, Dr. Jernigan talks about various events that are going on and cases we're involved in. And he makes a little statement about the organization, which I think still holds true today. So let's roll that clip, Will.
That, of course, is one more answer to the question, why the National Federation of the Blind? We keep plugging away to try to get first-class citizenship and equal treatment for blind persons in society. And I think we're the only group that consistently does that on a broad front.
Still true today. Still true today.
For sure.
And so I was listening to this release, and there were other people on the release. Dwayne Gerstenberger was on the release talking about the JOB program, which was a big deal in 1980. Probably don't have time to get into JOB this evening, but it's not something we talk about today much. We still talk about employment, but the JOB program was a big deal. And then the release goes on to talk about the Associates program. And the Associates program was a fundraising program that we had. Pam, you'll remember the Associates program.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, it was still around when I came around in 1996. And so on this release, the top states recruiting associates to, and associates were basically donors to the organization, and the top individuals contributing. So we took a clip of the associates list that was read. So let's hear that.
Number one, Maryland, 25 recruiters, 178 associates recruited, $3,218. Number two, Alaska, 5 recruiters, 126 associates recruited, $1,657. Number three, Florida, 3 recruiters, 89 associates, $1,781. Number four, Iowa, 14 recruiters, 73 associates, $1,182.
So just point out that Maryland was still number one.
And we were still having contests to see which state was
still having contests. Yeah, very interesting that Alaska was number two. That was pretty neat.
But more interesting was the reader in this case, who you can still tell it's Mrs. Jerning, but she sounded quite different on the recording. The interesting thing, though, is Dr. Jernigan then goes on to say, we're running out of time, but we have this PAC program, and it's coming up. It's doing okay. We'll talk about it another time. And, of course, the PAC program now is the real important fundraising program that we have for consistent discretionary dollars to the organization. Mrs. Jernigan, I don't know if you wanted to say anything about the 1980 release, but
the associates program we worked and worked and worked on, but somehow it just never quite got there.
We used to read these lists a little bit more on the release before we had more communication tools at our disposal. Now we tend to push that information out in other ways. But, you know, we have had additional content on the release besides the president or someone else that's been invited to participate in the release for some specific reason. And this has happened a number of times. Now, I don't know when my name was first mentioned on the release. I suspect it might have been mentioned probably when Melissa and I got married. I actually don't remember. I'm sure it was. But I looked up the release that happened after the 2007 Youth Slam, which was an important program that we had. And it was right after I became executive director here. And it turns out that on that release, at that time, it would have been the second side of the cassette that you would flip over. And so Dr. Maurer says, if you turn over to the other side of the cassette, you can hear some of the sounds from our 2007 Youth Slam. So I thought we'd share a little clip from that as well.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy the sounds.
I was wondering, what's the main goal of what you guys are working on right now?
What we're working on right now is the Hubble telescope, and it's really just to give us an idea of what it looks like and how it works and operates.
I think it'll help me be more confident because we have to do a lot of stuff by ourselves.
Even though the Youth Sound has just started, how do you think it will benefit you in the long run?
Okay, well, I think I'm going to be able to meet tons of new people from different areas of the country. I'm going to learn a lot about blind techniques and getting around and stuff, and just going to have a great experience all around.
What new confidence do you think you will have when you go back home on Saturday?
Cane travel and being able to get myself around.
We are working on a car right now that would be used by blind people.
Science is just a way to engage with the world around us.
So the release archives have many interesting little tidbits in it. And I got to thinking that the presidential release, the Federation was on the cutting edge in 1973 with the first podcast, I think. so this is number 500 for our podcast. So we're in 2020 and the release has now taken this live format, and it's interesting to think about how communications have evolved within our organization. I wonder if either of you have any thoughts about, what's most important about communications within our movement, especially as we move out of 2020 and the disruptive year that we've had.
Well, I have a thought, Mr. President.
Yeah.
The release came together in 1973, and it developed a style and a format. That format had variations, but it was largely the same. And it stayed largely the same until this live presidential release format came. The release was ordinarily something like 20 minutes, It could be less. It rarely was. It could be more. It frequently was. 25 minutes stretched the edge, and half an hour was positively the outside, unless there was something so important, so urgent, or so dangerous that it had positively to be recorded thoroughly. And that happened once or twice, I think not more than that. So 20 minutes was the objective. Now we're creating an hour long, and we're permitting two-way communication in the process. Today, what we get is mostly voices that are created here and sent out, sometimes voices from other locales, Pam, for example. But one time we're going to have to think up a two-way system whereby the questions can be live and the communication can be live. I know we tried working on some of this summer with the National Convention and had a good deal of success, but there needs to be an opportunity for a more thorough two-way in-person, live, on the spot, in today's moment, communication together. And that would be delightful.
Yeah, interesting. Any thoughts?
Whatever we do, whatever the new technology is, and you know what we've done this year with the Zoom, we've not used technology just to let it be distribution of information. I guess what I would offer is something of a cautionary thought about it. We don't know what the new technology will be, but whatever it is and whatever it permits us to do, we must do what we did this year. We didn't let it just become distribution of information. It always has to be our community getting together.
Mm-hmm.
One slight downside even of what we're doing this year. It's wonderful to have it in our own homes, but when we had it and can have it again at the chapter meetings, you listen to it all together, but then you talk about it and you relate it to what we are doing right now in mm-hmm. this particular chapter and how it's relevant to us.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever, maybe a technology will come about that we can, well, I guess it's already here. We can go into breakout rooms. As Zoom already allows us to do. But whatever we do, as long as we keep it being a family and a community experience, it'll be right.
Great. Well, Pam, I'm aware of the time. And so I don't know if you have more questions for us to take.
I do. Wow. We've just been enthralled by listening to this reflection of history. And also, you know, amazing, whether it's written letters to cassettes to Zoom or whatever happens next. It's amazing and powerful to me and to all of us how the president's release has, though the formats have changed, the core has always been the same and always will be. So thank you all for sharing. That's really amazing. Now we do have a couple questions, and one actually relates to the presidential release, the very first one that we played a clip. We have several people wondering if they have access, if we could post the entire release, how would they access it if they would like to hear the whole thing?
Yes, we can post presidential release number one on the presidential release page. We'll do that. We have many of the releases on CD, but they're not otherwise digitized. So, but presidential release one, we can certainly post because we do have it. So sure.
Awesome.
Stephanie's
okay.
Taking a note right now.
Excellent. And also, since your styling your NFB mask, we have some questions again always a popular topic. Can people still purchase masks? Are there any left?
There are some left, and we have ordered a few more, not as many as we did the first time around. So even if we don't have any now, unless I knew we still had some, we will have some more soon. So definitely call the market, and you can get some more NFB masks. I encourage you to keep wearing them.
Excellent. Now, we had many comments coming in about how much everybody enjoyed virtual conventions. Crystal Sanford from Texas and many different people commented on how much they are looking forward to our upcoming national convention in 2021. Wonderful New Orleans. Some questions have come up about any more details on the convention upcoming, except that it's going to be the best ever.
That's right. Well, we're going to have a convention, I think, next month. We will make that decision by March 1st. I know that the board will be discussing it thoroughly this weekend. In one sense, there's not an urgency to make a decision. We're going to have a convention. We know we can put on a great convention in New Orleans. We know we put on a great virtual convention. We're not in a hurry to make that decision. There's a lot of information breaking out even in the last month since the last release about vaccines and a lot of predictions about everybody who wants a vaccine will have one by June. I think we don't have enough data, but we're looking at this very closely. Obviously, we're going to make a decision that continues to allow us to get together as a community in the safest possible way.
Well, we are ready in whatever form and fashion. We are ready to welcome everybody. That's right. And the best place to be. So now, speaking of conventions, President Riccobono, you know, we're always looking forward, right? So we've got people wondering where 2022 is going to be.
Well, I couldn't tell you. Probably because we don't actually know yet. we will have a convention. We're doing a lot of looking. The disadvantage right now is you can't go on hotel tours.
Yeah.
So we have some good prospects, but we actually haven't signed a contract for 22. I suspect by the time we get into the spring, we'll have a 22 convention lockdown somewhere.
Excellent. Now, we've been talking a lot about voting and the powerful work that we've done in the National Federation of the Blind. And we had a question from Chris Minkler in Buffalo, my hometown, about whether would we consider in the future having our voting hotline, which is a great resource, open early for future elections for those people who may be using early voting. Maybe. Yeah,
it's a good suggestion. We'll take that back certainly we're looking at the voting strategy going forward. Now that the mail-in and early voting has become so widespread, we know that voting legislation is going to happen, that voting is going to continue to be a hot topic. I think it's a good suggestion that we think about how to evolve our voter hotline process to be able to support folks. So we don't have a plan for that right now, but we'll definitely look at that. We've normally only run this hotline in presidential election years. So it's quite intense to put it together. We'd have to figure out a new way to do it. But I think going back to the technology discussion, I think there's some possibilities there. So it's a good idea. We'll take that back and see how we can work that into our plan.
Okay, and we have.
Will the 2021 convention be both in person and online?
Well, we don't know the answer to that, but I imagine that the board's going to discuss that in detail.
And President Riccobono, Lauren Merrifield wonders how people are appointed to committees, presidentially appointed committees. How does that work? And how can, if you're interested in committees, how do you share that?
Good question. So committees of the Federation are appointed by the president, except for the nominating committee. So you can write to Office of the President at nfb.org and express your interest in being on a committee. Typically, committee appointments have run the calendar year. We've been thinking about moving them convention to convention, but we didn't get that done this year. So, but you can express your interest in the committee anytime. Just know if you don't hear anything right away, it might be because we're holding it till we look at committees in January. Keep in mind that there are certain committees everybody wants to be on, like resolutions. So we can't have everybody on the resolutions committee. But all of our committees are listed on our website. You can check them out there. And please, we need more people involved in the work that we're doing.
Excellent. Now, I think we have a time for one more question. And again, thank you, everybody. Thanks to our fabulous communications team for all of the announcements about a presidential release. Thank you to everybody for sending in questions. And if we didn't have a chance to get to your question tonight, don't worry. We will follow up. And this question, very important, I think. We have some questions about our letters to Santa. Could talk about that, that's very, very appropriate and important.
Yeah, absolutely. We continue to have an ongoing partnership with Santa Claus to deliver his content in Braille. And we have been doing that. I think we've had very close to 150 families already who have requested letters that have gone out as we have made them available in Braille on the big man's behalf. You still have, 15 days to get your letter requests in. You can go to our website and find our Santa Letters program there. The deadline is December 16, so that we can get them in the mail in time to arrive for Christmas. I encourage you to participate in this if you know of blind children who would like to get a Braille letter from Santa Claus. I did get a sneak peek, Pam, and there is also a cookie recipe in there.
Excellent.
Pretty neat tactile graphic. So, Santa Claus continues to step up his game in terms of delivering Braille letters.
Yeah, that is for sure. We can always count on him. Excellent. So, Mrs. Jernigan and Dr. Maher, do you have anything you would like to share, final comments or holiday greetings?
Well, I wish for all of my Federation family a blessed Christmas, that you celebrate it however it works out to celebrate this year, and it is splendid for all.
I share that wish and wish the blessings for Christmas for all who celebrate Christmas, and the blessings of the season for those who celebrate something else. And I wish for all of you a small miracle between now and the end of the year.
Thank you both so much. And thank you for your comments this evening, for the perspective that you shared, and for the continued example that you are to all of us as mentors and friends and colleagues, are so much our family. So thank you both. Now, President Riccobono, before I turn it back over to you, I just want to send warmest greetings from Roland and me to everyone. It's been an incredible year. I know it's been full of surprises, many unexpected, and lots of flexibility, and we've all been challenged in ways that we never imagined. As we always do in the Federation, our Federation family has risen to the occasion and exceeded expectations, as we always do. And we are very, very grateful to be part of our Federation family, and send all our best to our Federation family, to you and Melissa and the kids. And we thank you for your leadership, your willingness to listen and to be creative and flexible and not afraid to try new things, and always to work to hold our Federation family together with wisdom and integrity and love. So happy holidays, and I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Pam. Happy holidays to you and Dr. Maurer, Mrs. Jernigan. Thank you for being here. It's great to be in person with you again. So it's a nice, it's a little Christmas miracle early, I guess. So to close out, I'd like to offer, I do have my membership coin here. And, you know, of course, it has the word together on it. And I guess that's what I think about as we come to the close of this year. It's been a challenging year, as Pam said. It's been an unusual year for all of us. And it's been challenging for our movement. We've been tested in ways that we had not expected. We've lost loved members, family members to the pandemic. But what has shined through all of that is the love and determination that we find in this movement. And I know that I have been challenged to grow this year in so many ways, but what has kept me grounded and feeling really hopeful is what we have done together, whether it's protecting voting rights for blind people across the country and in states like Michigan, where we literally made it possible for thousands of voters with print disabilities to get a ballot in fully accessible form and fill it out for the first time and submit it without assistance. In our national convention, where we weren't sure we could produce an experience anywhere close to being in person. But I think I still have not seen a Zoom event as large as our national convention happen anywhere. And, you know, I think often about the roll call of states where we had all of our affiliates, not pre-recorded, but live and in person and engaged in the convention. So many individual miracles have happened where members of ours have reached out to blind people who needed help and who needed, whether it was groceries or figuring out how to get to a testing center or whatever it has been, the outreach that all of you have done has been so tremendous. I can't feel anything but warmth and hope coming to the end of 2020 and looking ahead to what we're going to do in 2021. I also want to acknowledge that, you know, it has been a year of growth. We've been challenged personally and as a movement to dig deeper and take stronger actions as it relates to our members, friends, colleagues of color, and making sure that we continue that to ensure that this movement reflects the diversity and inclusiveness that is really built into the values that you can find in the leadership and the work that we've done. You can find it even in listening to presidential release number one and before that. We've been challenged this year, and we know that 2021 is going to represent a year where we need to do more in that area and so many others. But I do believe that because of each and every one of you, because of the great leaders that we have, like Pam and Dr. Maurer, Mrs. Jernigan, the folks that we've heard from this evening, our tremendous staff who have continued to work in so many aspects of our organization this year, that we're going to push forward into 21 stronger, more together than we have ever been. I do wish for each of you a very happy holiday season. I'm looking forward to Christmas with the Riccobono family and reflecting on the togetherness that we've had this year and the blessing of having each and every one of you in our lives this year, and each and every one of you who have reached out at that right moment this year when it seemed like things were only going to get harder. We've been strengthened by your love and support, and we're honored to be have the opportunity to be part of this community with you. So we do wish you a happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and a very, very happy New Year. And we know it's going to be a great 2021 because of the Federation spirit we have. Now, we can't leave this 500th presidential release without some of the customary endings. Now, there are 499 releases worth of endings we had to comb through to get this the endings for this release. But we put together a little montage, which includes a couple of things. One is the ending from presidential release number one. And then we have a part of the customary ending from Dr. Maurer's first presidential release when he was elected president in 1986. Then we have the customary ending from my first release in 2014. I did not deliver the customary endings. They were delivered by Austin Riccobono. And then we have to close out my favorite ending, which was one that I attempted to deliver along with Oriana Riccobono. Her response is really what you want to listen to. And then after that, we have a not so customary ending that was presented on presidential release number 401. This was December 2011. So Dr. Maurer talked about making special moments on the release. This is a recording that was played, put together for that release, done by Chris Danielson, who's our Director of Public Relations, and Parnell Diggs, who is a longtime member of ours from South Carolina. At the time of the recording, he was a national board member. So with that, I'll say happy holidays, happy new year, and let's go build the National Federation of the Blind.
The other day, somebody asked me if I knew what you call a sleeping bull, and I told him no, and he told me it was a bulldozer.
What goes ha 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 bam? That's a man laughing his head off.
My name is Austin James Riccobono, and I have some jokes to tell you. Why don't leopards ever take a bath?
Why?
Because they don't want to go spotless. What's invisible and smells like carrots?
What?
Bunny burps.
What did the coffee say to the cream?
I have no idea.
It's hard for me to express all my feelings, but I love you a latte.
I don't give it.
Merry Christmas to you all. May your holiday season and your new year be the best ever.
Come, they told me, ba-da-ba-bum-bum. A newborn king to see, ba-da-ba-bum-bum. Our finest gifts we bring, ba-da-ba-bum-bum. To lay before the king, ba-da-ba-bum-bum. Rum-ba-bum-bum, rum-ba-bum-bum. Come, they told me, ba-da-ba-bum-bum.
Can it be?
A newborn king to see, ba-da-ba-bum-bum. Our finest gifts we bring, ba-da-ba-bum-bum. To lay before the king, ba-da-ba-bum-bum. Ba-da-ba-bum-bum, ba-da-ba-bum-bum. So to honor him, ba-da-ba-bum-bum. When we come,
every
child must be made aware. Every child must be made to care. Care enough for his fellow man to give all the love that he can. I played my drum for him, but I played my best for him, but he smiled at me, but
the preceding message was brought to you by Mark Riccobono, President, National Federation of the Blind, Office of the President at nfb.org, 410-659-9314, www.nfb.org. Let's go build the National Federation of the Blind.